It's News Talk Tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards. And as we mentioned earlier, it's Happy National New Friends Day. And I'm going to make some new friends as we jump into the rundown. I'm joined by Bob Richardson, News Talk 1010 contributor and senior counsel at National Public Relations. And Tasha Kiridan is here, columnist for the National Post and a writer on Substack at TashaKiridan.com. Welcome to the rundown. Thanks for joining me.
Hello.
Good evening.
So, first story, the headline, Trudeau not ready to accept U.S. finding that Palestinian outfit was behind the Gaza hospital blast. He said Thursday that Canadian officials are still reviewing evidence about the Gaza hospital blast that killed and maimed many Palestinian civilians, and he's not prepared to say who's responsible. Is this a way of stemming the flood of misinformation that seems to be coming out of that region, or is he just playing it a little bit too safe and not trying to assign blame to anyone here? Bob, what do you think?
Well, number one, I say good. Everyone needs to stop pretending they know what they're talking about in terms of the Mideast. And I think the government of Canada needs a 24-hour rule put in place where they don't comment on incidents related to the war, so that they don't get themselves into a problem. I further think journalists need to put a rule in place where they don't quote Hamas officials as though they are public health officials. They are members of Hamas. So that needs to be stopped too as well. So look, I think overall the government has done a good job in its statements, its airlift, getting people out of the West Bank, being present and active, all those things. But I think they ought to be cautious, and doing no comment when they think it's time to do no comment is not such a bad idea.
Tasha, do you think that we have been reporting facts that are not necessarily in evidence?
Well, I think the government jumped to all sorts of conclusions. I mean, a lot of people did, in fairness, to Bob's point, misinformation fired around the world. Everyone took Hamas at their word that it was an Israeli rocket. But you now have the BBC admitting their own reporters' speculation over the misfire was wrong. We know that they jumped the gun too, and they set the whole world on fire with this. I think that the government now has enough. There's enough evidence to say that this definitely was not clearly an Israeli attack, and that the evidence seriously points to Hamas. I think that would be a much more honest way of putting it than simply not, you know, refusing to speculate or refusing to reach a conclusion. You don't have to reach a conclusion, but you can admit that the first thing was wrong, and the evidence now looks like X, because that is what it does. And I mean, the United States is even saying so, that you know, U.S. State Department. It mystifies me. I think if this was reversed, I'm not sure what the government would be doing. I think that they feel they have egg on their face, but by not saying anything, they're making things worse, especially for a lot of Israelis and a lot of Jewish people in this country who feel like, you know what, they're in the crossfire now of a lot of hatred. And that has to be disabused. We cannot let anti-Semitism take more root here than it already has.
Do you think that there should be, though, a cooling down period of some sort? I think the media has been so hyped to get there first, to get their headline out first, to tweet about something before they've got 100% confirmation. Do we need to get all old school on this and go back to the days when, you know, you took your time with a story before letting information that could potentially harm people out into the world? Bob?
Well, what we ought to do is introduce some adults into this conversation. Adults among journalists, adults among government officials would be good, so that people are not rushing out immediately because they're concerned that they're going to miss a cycle on Twitter. So I think we need to cool it. We need to deal with these things in an appropriate fashion. I think government doesn't need to run out and react every 2 hours to whatever's going on there. And I think journalists need to be a lot more cautious, including our friends at the CBC. So, you know, I think there's a lot of there's a lot of learning from this incident, and hopefully from that learning, we'll get better coverage going forward.
Tasha, Bob mentioned the CBC. They have been inundated with complaints for refusing to use the word terrorist when referring to Hamas fighters in their coverage of the Israeli-Hamas war. The editor-in-chief of the CBC News, Brody Fenlon, says that now is not the time to revisit this policy. So the policy is from the probably the AP style book, or one of them. Perhaps the CBC has their own style book, which says that we are not going to refer to militant soldiers or anyone else as terrorists, because the notion of terrorism remains heavily politicized, and that becomes part of the story. Did I hear laughing when I was reading that?
Honestly, the CBC has really lost a lot of credibility in its reporting on this conflict. It really has. A lot of people who, you know, have not been the, you know, and I've never gone to the defund the CBC mm-hmm. screaming of the Conservative Party, but I'm getting there just watching this. I'm sorry. I really am. And I find it very frustrating to see, you know, this equivocation, at a time when Hamas has been recognized as a terrorist organization for 17 years by multiple governments, mm-hmm. including our own. I mean, what is the mystery here? This is not confusing. The other thing, I think Bob made a really good point. There's a criteria. It's very simple. It's called responsible journalism. You need to have more than one source, usually preferably three, right, before you report a fact, something especially as serious as this. And that's the issue with the Hamas / allegedly Israeli rocket. They didn't know. They had a Hamas report, and they took it at its word, as opposed to getting multiple confirmations. So that's it's not rocket science, journalists. The problem is we have a lot of people out there who either don't know those rules or don't play by them. And it shouldn't have been the BBC, frankly. They should have known better. But a lot of other media outlets, smaller media outlets, citizen journalists, so to speak, that's where we're getting into trouble with a lot of information.
And Bob, these language standards have been around for 40 years. Perhaps it's time to revisit.
Well, there's that. But look, I don't want to beat somebody when they're down the CBC, but please hand me the bat. They never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity, as they did, and saying that now is not the time to revisit the term. Well, when are we going to revisit the term? When are we having a special tea party to do this? I think this is probably a very good time to review the term and review the journalistic standards. So they should also be reviewing things every day to make sure that they're removing any potential bias. So this is a big fail once again by the CBC. That's unnecessary. And I am a supporter of the CBC. I'm not a defund the CBC person, but boy, some days they make it difficult to be their friend.
In Canada, India news, Canada has evacuated 41 diplomats and their 42 family members from India after Delhi made good on its threat to strip them of their diplomatic immunity. That's from Foreign Affairs Minister Melanie Joly. Is this an overreaction or an escalation of tensions or both, Tasha?
Well, if you don't have diplomatic immunity, you can't be a diplomat. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if India sent a very clear signal with this, it's very embarrassing for Canada. Very embarrassing. So essentially, I think we have 20 diplomats in India, which is, you know, a country that warrants far more. We were hoping to make additional economic ties, security ties in the Indo-Pacific. All that's out the window now. And I don't think it's not an overreaction. It's just what you have to do. You can't guarantee the security of your mission if they don't have diplomatic immunity. So they have to come home. At least we're not doing it the other direction. That would have been, even more ridiculous. But this shouldn't have escalated to this point. I think the whole issue was mismanaged from the beginning by the government. And, that now we're here. And I wish we had the good news story tonight, but I guess when it comes to the government, we don't.
Well, we may get there. We've got a couple of more segments to go. You're listening to The Rundown on News Talk Tonight. My guest, Bob Richardson, News Talk 1010 contributor and senior counsel at National Public Relations. Tasha Kiradin, columnist for The National Post and a writer on Substack, TashaKiradin.com. I'm Richard Krause, in for Jim Richards. Stay with me. There's lots more Rundown to come after the break.
News Talk Tonight continues on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Richard Krause, in for Jim Richards, hoping that he's feeling better and back in the big chair tomorrow. In the meantime, though, we're in the middle of the Rundown. That means we bring people who are far more clever than I am in to kick around some of the big stories of the day. Joining me today is Tasha Kiradin, columnist for the National Post and a writer on Substack, TashaKiradin.com. You can find her there. Bob Richardson's also here. He's a News Talk 1010 contributor and senior counsel at National Public Relations. Thank you for hanging around during the break. And Tasha, you wanted to have a good news story, but I'm afraid you're going to have to wait because this isn't that one. Canadians lack access to antibiotics of last resort. So Canadians who do not have access to 19 of the 29 antibiotics that the World Health Organization has classified as antibiotics of last resort. There is a growing resistance to antimicrobial drugs. Health Canada has not done enough to improve market access to new antimicrobial drugs available in this country, but you can get a lot of them in the United States. I think it's something like America has access to all 13, and in Sweden and the UK, they have access to 8 of the 13. So, Tasha, do you feel less safe because we don't have access to these new drugs?
Well, with microbial and antibacterial resistance on the rise, yes, I do, because they keep developing new drugs because things keep getting more resistant. So that is extremely concerning. It's also extremely concerning now that PharmaCare is coming down the pipe, because we know that in countries like New Zealand that have sort of PharmaCare that the NDP would have the Liberals set up here, there's been a dramatic drop in the number of new medications that are available to New Zealanders. I don't want that to happen here. If this is already happening with these drugs, that's very, very concerning. So I think it's a shot across the bow everyone's got to pay attention to.
And Bob, why don't we have these drugs here? What's going on?
I don't know. I'm barely staying awake on this item. I read through it a couple of times, and I thought it was the most boring story I've read in a long time. It's an insider. It's bureaucratic. If there's a problem, fix it. And that's what I have. That's what my comment is here. I don't think it's much more complicated than that. And that's something that our officials need to be doing in Ottawa.
Well, let's... Okay, go ahead, Tasha.
I would say it's not actually. What it is that companies won't introduce them for approval. They have to be approved country by country. If they haven't been approved because of a bureaucratic backlog, I hear you, then it's bureaucracy. If they haven't been approved because they're cost prohibitive, or the government doesn't, they're not within the cost range the government's now prepared to pay, that's a bigger problem.
Bob, Sarah Jama threatens legal action against Doug Ford over Israel-Gaza comments. There was a letter sent to the premier's office today, according to a lawyer representing Jama, and demands that the premier retract the posts and publicly apologize within 7 days for making defamatory remarks that accuse her of having a history of anti-Semitism. Is this Premier Ford overstepping in his comments, or is this cease and desist an overreach on Jama's part?
I'm a little torn on this one. Look, I'm a big supporter of the State of Israel, have been all my life. I visited the country, I've met with Israeli officials, etc., etc. I support them in this war. So that's the point I would make off the top. But in this Sarah Jama situation, look, she got elected in a democracy, whether we like it or not. If she's made stupid and inappropriate remarks, there are rules in place for the speaker to enforce. I don't think, and I don't care what the issue is, a majority of members from one party can silence an opposition member. I think that that is wrong. My view is, let's go out and defeat her at the ballot box, which is what we ought to be doing, because I think she is a terrible MPP, from what I understand. But let's not immortalize her. Let's go out and defeat her. But I also think there's a little bit of grandstanding on the part of part of the government here. And I think he probably did go a little too far. But I just don't believe that democratically elected official should be shut up by the majority of the members of the legislature. That's just not kosher with me.
And Tasha, do you think that there is any validity to this cease and desist letter? Do you think anything will come of it?
Well, look, I think Ford can't ask her to quit. And she, in this one, I mean, she has said things since, you know, she was a member of the Boycott, Divest, and Sanction Against Israel Committee at McMaster University in 2014. I looked her up because I was like, why is he saying this? I don't know her as an MPP. Is there any truth to this? She's, you know, held up signs saying Black Lives Don't Matter in Israel. I mean, this is a right to say those things, but you know, clearly the stuff she's expressed and things she's retweeted have had anti-Semitic overtones. So he's not wrong in saying that she's evinced these sentiments. But yeah, what's he going to do about it? She could be censured by her own party if they feel that she's overstepped the line, and that's on Merritt Stiles to do, not on Doug Ford. And absolutely, this is one of the arguments why some people think we should have recall legislation in this country. If people don't love their MP, if the MPP is really bad, that they are able to mobilize, but you know, to get her out. But if the electorate doesn't do that, then yeah, they'll vote her back in if that's what they choose to do, as Bob said.
And this story, I probably should have put this story right after the antibiotic story, but new data shows that errors are growing in Canadian hospitals, as 1 in 17 hospitalizations from March 2022 to March 2023 involved a patient experiencing harm, according to a new report from the Canadian Institute for Health Information. That is an estimated 145,000 Canadians who went in for treatment and may have ended up with an infection, pneumonia, medication error, or perhaps a bed sore. Bob, shouldn't this be much bigger news?
Yeah, it should be bigger news, and it's something that we all ought to be concerned about. Look, our nurses are exhausted. There's a problem with staffing levels. There's a problems with the number of hours that they're on. There's problems with shifts. And also there's a problem with private replacements. And I think who are a bit transient, and I suspect that there are mistakes that get made there. So I think there's a price to having good nursing, and that is paying them properly and staffing it properly. And I think, in my personal opinion, phasing out the private nursing at public sector institutions, which is very transient in terms of its nature.
Tasha?
I think it's a combination of things. I think absolutely the number of nurses, I mean, there were fewer nurses than we need for a long time, and the pandemic made it incredibly worse because of the overwork these women, and mostly women, but I mean, nurses generally suffered, and the fact that so many of them decided also to leave the profession because they were burned out. So we have a problem there. There's also a problem with those antibiotics that was putting Bob to sleep before, though, because some of these things, the increase in infections, 20% increase in urinary tract infections, and also we know there's superbugs in hospitals. That's an issue that we need to address generally, and we have to get on top of that, too.
We just have about a minute left. Are we, as generally speaking, the general public, are we just sick of teachers saying that they're going to go on strike?
Cough joke.
Another story where I'm throwing water at myself. No. Look, get back to the bargaining table, all of you, both the government and the teachers. This is serious. People don't want to have their kids out at home. We're coming off the back of a pandemic. Fix this friggin' problem, and there should be no reason why we can't fix it. I think it's still possible, and I think with goodwill both on the government and the teacher side, it will get fixed.
You're listening to The Rundown on News Talk Tonight. My guests are Bob Richardson, News Talk 1010 contributor and senior counsel at National Public Relations, and Tasha Kieradin, columnist for The National Post and a writer on Substack. Find her at TashaKieradin.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about, with my rundowners, Doug Ford story about Doug Ford and his personal phone records. Can we ask him to hand over his personal phone records when there's not really any firm evidence that he did anything wrong, that there was anything inappropriate here? We'll find out from Bob and Tasha when we come back. I'm Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards. Stay with me.
You're listening to News Talk Tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards. A number of years ago, I interviewed Sarah Ferguson, and she had four cell phones on the table next to her while we were doing the interview, and they're all different colors. And at the end of the interview, I said, "What's up with all the cell phones?" And she said, "One is for my assistant. They only have that number. One is for my daughter, one's for my son, and one is for the palace." So it's not uncommon for people in public life to have more than one cell phone. On The Rundown with my guest, Bob Richardson, News Talk 1010 contributor and senior counsel at National Public Relations, and Tasha Kieradin, columnist for The National Post and a writer on Substack. Check out TashaKieradin.com. I want to ask about the Ontario NDP calling on Doug Ford to release his personal phone record. So apparently he hasn't used his work phone for some time. It does not surprise me he has more than one phone, but he hasn't used it for a while, and people are wondering, because there are multiple investigations related to the Green Belt and the government's plans for Ontario Place, that perhaps, you know, they should know exactly who he's calling and who he's talking to. So, Tasha, do you think that this should happen, even though there's no real evidence of him doing anything wrong?
Who's Mayor Stiles talking to? Want to see her phone? I mean, look, if there's an investigation, we know there's an investigation happening, and the RCMP should request phone records if they think they're pertinent. That's where it stops. You can't just, I mean, who'd she release them to? The Toronto Star? Like, no.
And Bob?
Yeah, look, whether you like this or don't like that, this guy got elected and reelected as premier of the province. Can we let the people who get elected do their jobs? No, we shouldn't be handing over his phone. If there's something inappropriate, if there's something, as Tasha just said, that the RCMP want, they should be able to get it. Short of that, it's not there. It's nobody's business. This is a bit of a, I was an opposition leader's chief of staff, so I can appreciate this. This is a fire will and hope some of it sticks on the wall, and probably nothing more than that. So the answer is no, they shouldn't get his phone record.
Well, Tasha, shouldn't he be using his work phone, though?
Well, yes, I think. I mean, I think, look, he should be using his work phone in the sense that, yes, because that is what the work phone is for business. Of course, you know, using your personal phone leads to the question of, well, why, right? What are you hiding something? Is it not FOI-able, as they say, like freedom of information?
Right.
Can you not? That's possible. That's the conclusion people will come to. So he's asking for trouble using his own phone. It's kind of silly, to be honest.
So there's a TikToker who went across the border, and he bought some groceries there, and he bought some groceries at a downtown Loblaws in Toronto, spent $60 at the downtown Loblaws, and he found the most appallingly priced product when compared to the U.S. counterpart was a package of chicken thighs. In Canada, it was $13.65 for these chicken thighs. South of the border, 2 weeks prior, there were $3.55 USD, U.S. dollars, so approximately like $4.85 or something like that. Bob, I know supply chains. I know that there are all sorts of reasons perhaps why this would be a little bit more expensive here, but three times the price?
Yeah, it seems. First of all, kudos to our TikTok friend. I'm glad he's doing this, and I hope he does it regularly, because I think the more transparency we have on food pricing, the better off we'll all be. And as I said before, transparency and food pricing hasn't always been the strong card of the ownership of those companies. Witness the bread issue a few years back. So good on him for doing that. I think we do have to be a little cautious. Are the products exactly the same?
The American version was bigger.
There's a whole bunch of issues like that that people need to take into account. But hey, I think this is good, and more power to them.
Yeah, the American version of this was actually a little bit larger than the one that he bought in Canada. Tasha, I mean, you can explain things away with inflation, but not that much of a price gap.
Yeah, I'm looking at the product, though. He even admits it. I mean, I'm so sick of these TikTok. Like, I'm a guru. No, honestly, TikTok is, I will say, it's a garbage pail when it comes to factual information. And you say, yeah, I know it's organic. That's not the point. Well, it is the point. I don't buy organic stuff because it's more expensive. Maybe it's better for me, but I'll eat the pesticides. You look at these two chicken packs, the certified organic stuff, always more expensive. And the other one is much fattier. You look at the product, you can tell it's not as good quality for sure. It's a mass-produced chicken. Don't forget, America's the land of chicken. Lots of chickens go there to die. They're born to be eaten, and it's terrible, like the conditions they live in. That's why they're so cheap. So I'm looking at these two and say, yeah, one's a farm-raised bird that's flopping around. The other one was in a horrible factory pecking and being pecked at by its neighbors. That's why it's cheaper. And, take your TikTok and go home.
Ours is the Rosedale chicken.
Yes, the Rosedale chicken.
From the Five Thieves? Is that what you're talking about? Yeah. The home of the $25 pineapple?
What?
So
he's comparing a Cheektowaga chicken to a Rosedale chicken. That's a problem.
Chicken and oranges. There you go.
Tuition hike leads McGill to suspend a $50 million French program. So a decision by the Legault government to double tuition fees for out-of-town out-of-province students attending English language universities in Quebec has forced McGill University to suspend the announcement of a five-year, $50 million program aimed at teaching its students and faculty French. Is this McGill playing games, Bob?
I will defer to my friend Tasha on this, who's far more knowledgeable of it.
Okay.
As a Quebecer, I'll let her go first, and I'm passing you the bat, Tasha.
Well, I think it's, you know what, McGill will be out a pile of money, and I don't blame them. I don't think it's necessarily a tit for tat situation, but the timing of it, sure, of course, that's how people are going to read it. They are going to be losing millions and tens of millions of dollars. It's over $100 million that's going to go from the English system to the French. And the irony here is they're teaching people French when the government's saying you English students are a threat to our province. Why bother teaching people French? They don't want them to. I mean, the whole thing is just the Quebec government is really, really acting badly in this situation, telling students they're not welcome, but please come. We want your money. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. This is a bad idea. It's bad policy. It's bad, cheap politics by the government, and it's a bad result. Ultimately, it's a bad result for the province, and that's really what the problem is. So hopefully saner heads will prevail, but we'll see.
Well, we didn't get to the good news stories, but thank you very much, both of you, for sitting in. That was Bob Richardson, News Talk 1010 contributor and senior counsel at National Public Relations, and Tasha Kiradin, columnist for the National Post and a writer on Substack. TashaKiradin.com is where you will find her. Thanks so much for sitting in tonight.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thanks.
I'm Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards. When we come back, we are going to talk about Biden in Tel Aviv and lots more. We've got a fascinating guest. We've got Brian Karam. He's an American journalist and author working as the White House correspondent and host of a podcast, Just Ask the Question. Stay with me. Lots more to come.